The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Peter C. Kavanaugh presiding.
We'll call case 4-22-0222. Counsel for the appellant, cross appellee, please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Whitman Brisky on behalf of the plaintiff appellant.
And counsel for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Atkus, A-T-K-U-S, for the defendant appellee cross appellant.
And just in case I didn't state the full caption, this is Sandra Rojas, appellant and cross appellee versus Sandra Martel et al., appellees and cross appellant. Counsel, you may proceed.
For the appellant. Thank you, Your Honors. Winnebago County discriminated against Nurse Rojas by forcing her to choose between termination of her position at the county health clinic, where she primarily served children, and transfer to a far less desirable position at a county-owned nursing home. The trial court so found, and the county has not appealed that decision. The county also stipulated to the amount of financial damage Nurse Rojas suffered as a result of her termination. The question to be decided by this court is whether Nurse Rojas is barred from compensation for her economic losses resulting from the county's illegal discrimination because she failed to mitigate her damages by accepting the nursing home position, the very position to which she was being transferred by the county's illegal action. Nurse Rojas had worked for many years at the county's clinic where she had regular business hours, did not have to work weekends, and worked primarily with children. She enjoyed this job and wanted to stay. Instead, the county, in a letter written by her boss, Dr. Sandra Martel, demanded that she choose between termination or transfer to a job at the nursing home. She knew, and the county's witness, Pamela Gettner, testified that unlike the job at the clinic, the nursing home job involved working nights and weekends, lifting heavy patients, bedpans, bathing and feeding patients, hospice care, dying patients, wound care, emergency situations, and the long-term care of geriatric patients. This was not the work for which Nurse Rojas was trained and at which she was experienced. It was under any rational standard.
Let me ask a question, counsel. What if a nurse said that during the COVID crisis? I didn't sign up for this. Would they be discriminated against if they were required to work long hours and come into contact with deathly ill patients and help with anything that was required because of staff shortages?
Well, every nurse would have had that very same issue. So this is not a question of discrimination, because every nurse would have been required to do so.
Well, in this instance, a nurse is asked to do what the county needs her to do. And the only reason the county needs her to do is because quite properly, she asserted a religious objection to some of the work that she might be required to do in the clinic.
Well, but the lower court found, and there's no appeal of that finding, that she did not have to go over to the nursing home, that she could stay at the clinic. So in fact, it's the very act of discrimination that is the transfer.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Indeed, the county itself has conceded that the nursing home job Dr. Martel offered her had significantly different responsibilities, less favorable work conditions, and less desirable hours. Nurse Rojas rationally and reasonably believed that this was a worse position, and she turned it down in a reasonable act. Anti-discrimination laws, such as the one at issue in this case, are remedial and designed to make the victims of discrimination whole from damage suffered as a result of unlawful discrimination. Requiring the victim of discrimination to accept a much less desirable position or face losing all compensation for economic losses does not make her whole and in fact allows her former employer to avoid liability.
Yeah, I have a question, counsel.
Yes, sir.
Are you challenging that the position at the River Bluff nursing home wasn't actually available to your client?
The trial court found that it was available, and we have not challenged that position.
Okay. Well, then the question or a point the trial court made in its thoughtful written findings was that your client failed to even consider this position, never pursued it, never engaged in it, so that many of the concerns you've been now expressing to us may not have been as serious as you described.
Well, the description comes from the county's own witness and the county's own stipulation. So in terms of the actual distinctions, they're clearly there. But in addition, Nurse Rojas' son worked at that nursing home and had talked to his mother about that, and that's in the record. And so she already knew what conditions were like.
She also had the misapprehension that there was a rule that would prevent her from working there because her son worked there.
Well, I'm not conceding that it was a misapprehension, but she did believe that. But that was not her primary reason for refusing that position.
The trial court made an explicit finding that the nursing home position was substantially equivalent to the plaintiff's position at the consolidated clinic. Two questions. One, how should we review that finding? And two, you seem to be claiming it's not correct. Why is that?
Well, first, with respect to the standard of review, the standard should be, de novo, because he failed to consider any of the factors required by that substantial equivalence standard. And he just considered compensation and title.
Well, counsel, let me back off for a moment. evidence was presented to the trial court, and the court heard and evaluated all that evidence and reaching its conclusion, did it not?
Well, I don't know what the court did. I only know what the court wrote.
Well, the court heard witnesses testifying on this precise point, did it not?
The nature of the evidence. But when it considered its analysis, it only considered those two factors.
Well, the point I'm making is this court not long ago wrote in a different context, but in a claim where the argument was that it's de novo review, that it's hard for us to see how trial court's finding could ever be subject to de novo review when the court has actually heard live testimony from witnesses on the subject, as happened here.
Well,
why doesn't the same analysis apply here?
Well, even if that were the case, it is clear because the evidence is uncontested, and there is a stipulation of the county that the two jobs are not equivalent. In effect, that even under another standard of review, Nurse Rojas would win.
Well, but that's a different question, whether you'd win on another standard. My question is, what's our standard of review? You're arguing it's de novo, and I don't understand how that can be when the trial court has heard live witnesses.
I understand your point, Your Honor, and I'm suggesting that whether you have uncontested facts, the court can look at this and look at those facts de novo. There's nothing for the trial court to decide as to who to believe.
Well, even if there isn't a contrary evidence presented, if that's what you mean by uncontested facts, isn't it the trial court's responsibility, indeed duty, as trier of fact in this case, to draw reasonable inferences from the testimony the court heard.
Well, I don't think the court drew any reasonable inferences. It just looked at the compensation and the job title and said, oh, those are the only things that count. Those are substantially equivalent jobs. And that's in the face of the stipulation.
You can go ahead, sir.
A terminated employee has a duty to act reasonably in seeking other compensation, other employment, which Nurse Rojas did by replacing all but a small amount of her salary. The bulk of her damages come from the loss of her county pension, which she could only have obtained or retained by taking the nursing home job at the county, which was at the very same time engaged in unlawfully discriminating her by attempting to transfer her to that job. It's the very fact of that transfer that is the discrimination, and which the county is now trying to use to bar her from any damages. This substantially equivalent analysis, which amplifies what constitutes reasonable efforts at mitigation, was derived from the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Ford Motor Company. And the majority of the federal cases applying this standard were decided under express mitigation requirement, Title VII. While there have as yet been no decisions interpreting this mitigation standard under the Conscience Act, it has been applied in numerous other anti-discrimination cases under state and federal law, including the Illinois Human Rights Act and Raintree Healthcare versus Human Rights Commission. That's a First District case. These cases make it clear that the alternative employment must offer virtually identical compensation, job responsibilities, working conditions, and status. And it must offer nearly the same hours and nature of work by conceding that the nursing home job involves significantly different responsibilities, less favorable work conditions, and less desirable hours. The county has effectively conceded that it is not substantially equivalent to the clinic job. Nor is it unreasonable for Nurse Rojas to have turned down a job with the county, which was at the very same time discriminating against her. The trial court recognized the applicability of the substantially equivalent analysis, but it failed to employ that analysis when it considered only job title and compensation and nothing else. This was a misunderstanding of Illinois law as applied to the undisputed facts. Indeed, the county has stipulated, as I indicated. Illinois courts have gone a step further and found that where the party offering alternative employment is the employer itself, the employer need not accept it if it would constitute a disadvantageous renegotiation of her original employment terms. That's the Schwarz case out of the Second District, whose precedence would govern this proceeding. Clearly, the job offered Nurse Rojas by her boss at the county clinic was not as good as the job she had, and forcing her to take it would have been a disadvantageous renegotiation of her employment terms.
Is it correct that if she had taken that job, her pension rights would have been protected?
That is correct. Indeed, that's the only job that would have protected her pension rights that would have that was even possible. So she would had to, in effect, knuckle under to the discrimination in order to preserve her pension rights. Dr. Martel, in the very same letter, demanded that Nurse Rojas choose between losing her job altogether or accepting the job at the nursing home. The county throughout this litigation has asserted that Dr. Martel had the authority to offer her the position at the nursing home and that it would be considered a transfer. Under the Schwarz analysis, because the job offer came from her original employer and by the admission of the county, constituted a transfer to another county facility and a less desirable position, Nurse Rojas had no obligation to accept it. Although the county never took this position below, and there was no evidence to support it in the record. After the trial had concluded, the trial court took judicial notice that the legal entity, which was the employer at the clinic, was not, according to the trial court, the same technical legal entity which was the employer at the nursing home. The trial court used that distinction in form, not in substance, to determine that Schwarz did not apply and denied Nurse Rojas her economic damages. As the second district, whose precedents govern, wrote in Schwarz, this
result... You keep saying that, counsel. What's the basis of that? What decision of the appellate court is binding upon this court in this case?
Well, Schwarz is.
And why? All the,
well, because the second, the Supreme Court, the Illinois Supreme Court, when it transferred Winnebago County to the jurisdiction of the Fourth District Appellate Court, expressly said in that order that in cases where they had started out in one district, the precedents of that district would continue to apply.
No, but the precedent of that case isn't binding in even the second district. A different panel of second district judges could disagree with it, couldn't they?
That could always happen. That
well, then how is it binding precedent on us?
I'm sorry?
How is it then binding precedent upon us?
Because the Illinois Supreme Court says so. Now, if the court...
So if this were a panel of the second district, that decision would be binding precedent upon us, and we could not disagree with our sister panel in the second district?
You could, yes, you could disagree, but that would still be precedent. I'm not talking about super precedents.
Well, I'm just talking about, are we required to follow that decision?
Yeah.
You use the term now at least twice, binding precedent. I didn't stop you the first time, but I want to stop you this time because
all right. I will concede, Your Honor, that it is not quote unquote binding precedent or super precedent or anything else, but it is precedent and it is from that court.
If I understand correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, seems like there's two different things going on here. The first question is, was there improper discrimination under the act? And the trial court found that there was. And then there's the question about, did, given that situation, did the plaintiff appropriately mitigate her damages? The trial court found that she did not. Can't these matters exist independently? And if I understand correctly, I don't think the county is challenging in this record the trial court's finding that it improperly discriminated. Is that correct in your mind, Mr. Briskin?
That is correct. And our position has always been those are separate questions, and okay, that the discrimination question wasn't. But what I am saying is that when the job that's offered in alternative is the very job that the transfer to what constituted the unlawful discrimination.
Yeah, but pausing right there, that's not how I understand it. I think the issue is not where was she transferred to. The issue was that she was transferred out or removed at all. Apparently, the finding was that was unnecessary. She could have done the job. She did the job for several weeks. The idea that she had to leave the clinic was wrong. That was the discrimination. That was where the trial court said you shouldn't do that. It's a different question entirely, it seems to me, about having so found, now what?
Well, even I'm saying that it's unjust, and the Schwarz case really goes to this point that the same employer can't just transfer or offer another job, which is worse than the job she had at the beginning, and say, oh, well, I'm escaping all liability if you turn it down because you've failed to mitigate. And I think that's what the Schwarz case says.
In Schwarz, there was an employment contract. How does that affect the circumstances? Because there's not an employment contract in this situation.
That's correct. And in this case, we have even worse situation for the county defendant, because here we have them unlawfully discriminating in a statute that is intended to make the employee whole. So we don't necessarily, I think they would both apply whether there's a contract or not. But the fact that that was a contract dispute and this was an employment discrimination dispute makes it even more important in our case.
Counsel, what the trial court wrote about the Schwartz case is this, and I'd like you to comment on it. No case has ever examined whether a plaintiff fails to mitigate damages by refusing alternative employment with the original employer that could uniquely prevent the greatest part of the damages claim, namely the lost benefits, lost pension benefits. Why isn't that a correct assessment?
Well, for one thing, it's contrary to Schwartz, which is the case he's commenting upon, because there it required virtually the same terms.
Any other questions? Very well, counsel. You have another 5 minutes to argue. For the appellee cross-appellant argument.
Good afternoon, justices, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Michael Atkiss. I'm appearing this afternoon on behalf of the defendants and respectfully requesting that the court affirm the judgment of Judge Doherty in the trial court. Judge Doherty applied the correct standard in determining whether plaintiff failed to mitigate her damages. Specifically, that standard was whether the plaintiff exercised reasonable diligence and ordinary care to minimize her damages in light of the facts and circumstances. There's plenty of evidence in the trial record to support the reasonableness and correctness of Judge Doherty's decision. First, the plaintiff declined to consider a position of employment as an LPN with the Winnebago County River Bluff Nursing Home, a position that had she explored, the evidence showed she would have been given. It was, and she would have been paid more actually than she was paid in the consolidated clinic position. And she would have retained her pension benefits with the IMRF, which made up a substantial majority of her economic damages in this case. Another point of evidence that supports the trial court's decision was, as Justice Stigman pointed out, the finding that plaintiff's belief that the nepotism policy precluded her from taking the job at the nursing home was, I think as trial court called it, quote, clearly mistaken. A couple other points that the trial court didn't raise specifically in its opinion, but would also support the finding of plaintiff's unreasonableness, is plaintiff's testimony that she had made up her mind not to accept any county job before the option of the position at the nursing home was ever even brought up to her. And the other point of evidence would be evidence that she initially was willing to consider that job until she found out from her son that the job included quote unquote hard work, following which she informed Dr. Martel that she was no longer interested in the position. Now the facts of the trial were disputed on these points.
Counsel, I have a question for you. The question I asked Mr. Briskey, is my understanding correct that you are not appealing the finding by the trial court that the decision to transfer, to remove the plaintiff from the clinic was a violation of the Conscience Act?
We are not appealing that. The we have decided to respectfully abide by Judge Doherty's decision on that point.
So
we're asking to affirm the judgment in whole.
Okay. Just so I understand the nature of your cross appeal, that is like a contingency based on what?
Yeah, it is a contingency. It's a contingency. Well, so the contingency where it would come into play Your Honor, would be if the court decides to reverse on the issue of mitigation. And the issue there is it's a narrow issue of pure law involving section, I don't want to misquote the section, let me look at my notes, section 1-102 of the Tort Immunity Act, which precludes an award of a punitive type damages against the local public entity.
So it is, but your position is we should affirm the trial court and including the finding against your client. You particularly want us to affirm regarding the failure to mitigate damages.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
Counsel, I have a question. And I understand what you've said about talking to her son and that, but to the outsider, and perhaps some nurses as well, doesn't it almost appear to be without question that a nursing home job would be different and have some different responsibilities than working in a clinic that opens at a certain time in the morning and closes at a certain time in the afternoon?
Sure. I mean, there's no dispute that the jobs are not, you know, can't be sort of one-on-one mapped onto each other. I mean, that would be hard to show with almost any job.
What about this substantially similar and whatever? That language makes it almost sound like it's got to be identical. Can that be correct? Or am I misinterpreting what is meant by substantially similar?
I will address Your Honor's question and move on to my discussion of that standard. So what the plaintiff is relying on for the substantially equivalent standard is a single sentence in a third district's opinion in Harreen versus the Human Rights Commission. So counsel's interpretation of this rule is that that Illinois has adopted a per se rule where it's always reasonable for a plaintiff to refuse to consider an alternate employment unless that alternate employment is for all practical purposes identical to the former job.
I take it in part what you're saying is if the salary is better and you keep your pension benefits and you keep the same employer, even though you might be a little disgruntled or a lot disgruntled with that employer, that those are pretty important and stand at the forefront.
What I'm ultimately saying, Your Honor, is those are factors that go to a factual finding in the trial court about whether the ultimate action of the plaintiff was reasonable in light of all the facts and circumstances. So the factors that you mentioned, higher pay, right, same field, retained benefits, right, those would all tend to show that the plaintiff's decision to not consider that position was unreasonable and a breach of the duty of care. A plaintiff points to the differences in the two jobs, which concededly there are. No two jobs are ever going to be the same. And a plaintiff will always be able to point to some difference between two positions to say, well, I didn't have to take this one because it's not the same as the job I lost. My ultimate point is when there's evidence that it would be unreasonable to take the position, and there's evidence that it would be reasonable not to take the position, that is a question of fact for the fact finder. And your review is owes proper deference to the fact finder. And here Judge Doherty weighed the evidence and he found that the jobs were substantially similar. I mean, even the case that plaintiff relies on, the Harreen case for the substantially equivalent standard, that case itself didn't apply the standard along the terms that counsel is suggesting that it should. In the actual facts of that case, the defendant had offered to reinstate the plaintiff at the same job that they'd been fired from, and the plaintiff declined to accept that offer. So really that statement in Harim didn't even really play into the court's holding in that case. So I think ultimately there is little support in Illinois law for this substantial equivalent standard. But even if the court thinks that that is the appropriate standard to apply here, that there's still plenty of evidence in the record for the judgment to stand, because under that substantially equivalent standard, there is evidence of equivalence as there is evidence of difference. And the trial judge, Judge Doherty, looked at that evidence and made a finding of fact. Now, the case law that does talk about substantial equivalence and use that test clearly supports my position that whether two jobs are equivalent and whether the plaintiff's decision to accept or reject such a job are questions for the fact finder. Now, you know, what Harim says is, well, as long as, you know, the positions are in the same line of work and they're not demeaning, well, then that's, you know, that's relevant evidence. And I guess I would posit that as long as there's some evidence coming from the defense to show that the declined position is in the same field and evidence to show that it's not, you know, quote unquote demeaning, then ultimately that's a question for the fact finder. And this review should be deferential to the fact finder in that sort of situation. A bit about the Schwarz case. I'd refer the court to Judge Doherty's analysis, and I wouldn't claim to be able to put forth a better analysis and distinguishment of that case than he did in his opinion. I would just like to point out one other thing that wasn't mentioned in the opinion, where I think that the reliance on Schwarz is a bit of a red herring, because plaintiff is contending that it sets forth sort of a per se rule or exception about not having to take a job from the same employer. But the language in Schwarz still talks about depending on the facts and circumstances, an employee may not have to take a job offer from the employee who was firing them. So, I mean, ultimately, in other words, I mean, Schwarz is still employing a fact-based reasonableness standard on the plaintiff's decision whether or not to accept or reject a job offer. And that's what I have to offer on that case. With respect to the cross appeal, I don't know how much time I have left, but to discuss the cross appeal again, it's contingent. It's in the event that this court finds decides to reverse Judge Doherty on the issue of mitigation. So it's to understand what plaintiff's asking is for you to reverse on the finding of mitigation and to award treble actual damages under the Conscience Act. In the trial court, we raised, we raised an affirmative defense based on 1-1 get it wrong. 1-102 of the Tort Immunity Act, which precludes punitive damage assessments against local public entities. So we raise that as an affirmative defense to any awarding of treble damages under the Conscience Act. Judge Doherty struck that affirmative defense pursuant to a motion to strike by the plaintiff. So that issue is it's a pure issue of law raised on the pleadings. And I would say that there's another court, the Paulson court, in the case of Paulson versus DeKalb, examined a very similar issue with respect to an affirmative defense raised by 1-102 in response to a request for trebling of actual damages under the Nursing Home Care Act. The Nursing Home Care Act essentially has a similar regulatory scheme as the Conscience Act. And in that case, the court found that, or the court reminded us that when necessary, the court needs to look at two statutes in harmony wherever possible. And I think it was especially concerned with its ability to do that, or the importance of doing that in a case where to not do that would or could result in an assessment of what amounted to punitive damages against a government, which is clearly against the public policy of this state. So where we think Judge Doherty erred in his decision on that note was by making a finding that he could not read the statutes in harmony and going to the question and employing the statutory canons, essentially finding that because the Conscience Act was more specific than the Tort Immunity Act, and because the Conscience Act was enacted later than the Tort Immunity Act, that it should, you know, quote unquote, trump Section 1-102 of the Tort Immunity Act's prohibition against an assessment of punitive damages. So my position is that the Paulson case provides a roadmap to this court to read the sections in harmony, which it must do if it can. So the harmonious way to read the statutes, is like the court did in Paulson, would be to find that while the Conscience Act sets forth a regulatory scheme that in general applies to local governmental entities, the clear statement of law in Section 1-102 that punitive damages cannot be awarded against a local governmental entity, notwithstanding any other provision of law, is also true. And those can be read in harmony together, and there's no need to resort to the canons of statutory construction to determine, you know, which statute should apply to the exclusion of the other. If your honors don't have any questions, I suppose I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Seeing no questions, you'll have that final 5 minutes. Rebuttal on behalf of the appellant.
Good afternoon again, your honors. I'd like to make just a few points. First, under the standard, which Mr. Atkus then brought up to the court a few minutes ago, if the job is of equivalent compensation but is not demeaning, then in effect, the employee has to take it. And I would say that for a nurse who is a pediatric nurse, who is then transferred to a nursing home where she has to lift patients and change bedpans and all of the rest of the things I talked about, that's demeaning. Second, the Conscience Act, and this goes to the question of whether the discrimination and the mitigation are separate. The Conscience Act specifically includes, among acts of discrimination, a transfer, and this was a transfer. So in effect, the transfer to this less good job was part of the discrimination. So they're not entirely separate, as we were discussing before. And it is not the plaintiff's contention that the two jobs must be identical. They only need to be substantially equivalent. And that goes to a reasonableness standard. And but these jobs aren't even close. We're not talking about jobs that are only slightly different or have a few different changes. These are truly a good job and what is a very difficult job. And whether she made up her mind before or after isn't important, because the standard is whether or not the defendant can show that a substantially equivalent job existed for her to take. And forcing her to take a much worse job certainly does not make her whole. And that's all I have, Your Honor.
I wonder, counsel, if you know any registered nurses or LPNs or nurses aides that work in nursing homes, and whether you do or not, you've labeled them here today as being in a demeaning position. I don't think the county would appreciate that. I don't think those employees would appreciate that. I would imagine that there are some nurses that take jobs in nursing homes because of geography or convenience, or because they have an interest in working with geriatric patients. I don't understand that ought to be the standard.
But that isn't Nurse Rojas' position. I mean, she was clearly a pediatric nurse, and this was for her much worse position.
She was a nurse who was working in pediatrics. Are you suggesting that the record shows she had training as a pediatric nurse?
I believe it did, yes. Okay. And certainly her experience.
Yes, agreed. Understood.
Very well. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Eckes, final rebuttal?
Sure, just one quick point. Counsel's quick to mention Nurse Rojas's experience as a pediatric nurse. I think
what you get to rebut is what is relevant to your cross appeal. You don't get another opportunity to rebut the primary argument.
Oh, okay. I apologize, Your Honor. I didn't mean to misstep. I was just responding, I suppose. I don't have anything further to add on my cross appeal, and I apologize and withdraw any statements that may have been in violation of the rule.
That's fine. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Brisky, are you there?
I am indeed, Your Honor.
Very good. I just want to make sure you heard the rest of the comments. You went when you muted your camera, it went black as well. So, but you
I was just trying to be courteous to Mr. Atkins. That's all.
Okay, we appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
All right, this matter will be taken under advisement, and the court now stands in recess. Thank you, gentlemen.